And it is time for Oh the Humanities, taking a look at humanities scholarship research and events on campus and beyond. Going to be talking about one coming up in a couple of weeks on February 15th. More on that in just a couple of minutes. Joined in the studio by Max Orr, who heads up Carolina Public Humanities on campus. Humanities.unc.edu is their website. Also the composer of that theme music you just heard a couple of seconds ago. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. You might have recognized my Grammy win last night. For that particular piece of music.
I did not stay up late enough to catch it. It must have been one of those...
Maybe?
Maybe. I was going to say one of the awards that they wait until the very end to build up the suspense.
That was it. Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's great to be here. We had the week off, of course, in celebration of Martin Luther King Day last week, but it's great to be back with you, Aaron. And, I do this thing for you all the time. I bring something related to today's date, and I'm very conflicted about this one.
Uh-oh.
The way I do it is I use that magic thing called Wikipedia and type in the date and find something that's related to today's talk. And I said, oh, that's amazing, because it said on January 27th in 1825, the U.S. Congress put aside the Indian Territory. And then I did a little investigation, and I could not find any other thing to corroborate that. And it looked like it might have happened in 1831 or 1834. And anyway, I will not press our guest.
Okay.
All I will say is that watch out for Wikipedia. I will always dig deep, and in this case I came up and said it looks just too perfect. They probably put it there because they knew our guest would be an expert on Native American culture, American history of the 19th century, and our guest today is Garrett Wright. He's a teaching assistant professor at the University of North Carolina in the history department. He's also a recent PhD just last year, so newly minted Dr. Garrett Wright is here, and he is one of the speakers at a seminar on February 15th coming up called Great Journeys, in which we'll be looking at everything from Christopher Columbus to Lewis and Clark, which Dr. Wright is here to talk about, as well as looking at Mark Twain going to Europe and how Mary Shelley wandered around Europe and helped inspire Frankenstein. Very different types of journeys, but all of them great. So, Garrett, welcome.
And thanks for being
great
here.
To be here.
We're absolutely delighted. So we asked Garrett to talk about Lewis and Clark, but he's also going to talk about something else. So let me just ask in general, What makes Lewis and Clark a great journey besides the distance they traveled?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, you know, the scope itself is great, right? It's transcontinental. But for me, and relevant to what maybe happened on today in history, really the Lewis and Clark expedition ushers in a new kind of era of United States Indian policy.
Yeah. How significant was it to Americans at the time?
I mean, that depends on who you are referring to as Americans. I think to the American Indians who lived in Louisiana Territory, it wasn't actually that significant, but people like Thomas Jefferson certainly like to see it as this huge changing moment.
Yeah. How closely, let me rephrase that, how closely was it followed in the media, for instance?
Very closely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was of great interest to people.
Yeah.
And really, truly, it's a remarkable story. I guess focusing on just the sort of going out part of it to start, a remarkable story of a sort of a conflation of science and empire. Are you going to cover those aspects of that journey and what was it they were trying to do besides just sort of stake a claim to the land that the United States had just purchased?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about kind of gearing up for settlement, for kind of asserting American power over Louisiana. And so that's all about knowledge of the space, knowledge of the people, and relationships with the people who lived there.
And also beyond Louisiana as well, right? Because the idea was already in people's heads that we were going to just continue on expanding and acquiring more territory after that.
Absolutely. And so that's kind of what I mean by a new era in Indian policy is kind of the beginnings of these ideas of manifest destiny.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I study a lot of colonialism in the 19th century, as you know, in teaching in Algeria, France and Algeria and other sub-Saharan African, and the idea of ethnography and sort of the scientific ideas that go into colonialism. So it seems early for that, but that you're telling me that's also going on way, in the early 19th century.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Thomas Jefferson has his kind of eye on the future, for sure, in all of those ways.
I mean, I imagine his own work on Virginia, where he wrote that, you know, sort sort of ethnography of Virginia and whatnot probably played into, if we do the same thing for areas that are not settled, we can have the same sort of power that comes from understanding.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And in some of his letters, he's extremely explicit about this is what we're going to do to bring this land under our control.
So the talk on February 15th is titled Journeys to and from the Great Plains, Native Americans and the Lewis and Clark Expedition. And the way that title is phrased suggests that this is going to be discussing the expedition from the Native American perspective. Is that accurate? Or
absolutely.
Yeah.
So it'll not only be that, but it's also going to focus on a less familiar, but I would say equally great expedition or journey, which is a journey of American Indians from the Great Plains who, after meeting Lewis and Clark, travel to Washington, D.C. and explore this new nation known as the United
States.
Tell
us about that.
Yeah, so as Lewis and Clark went around the Louisiana Territory, they would meet with American Indian leaders and diplomats and exchange goods, strike treaties, and invite them back to Washington, D.C. to meet Thomas Jefferson as a kind of recognition that their frontier outposts near Louisiana were pretty weak and not very impressive, but that maybe the cities back on the Atlantic seaboard would impress these new allies and kind of prove the worth, the worthiness of the United States.
You know, and the similar question that Aaron had asked about the publicity and the recognition of this. Was that equally recognized? Did people care about the Native Americans coming back to Washington as well?
Absolutely. So they were hyped up the entire way. So they trekked thousands of miles. Newspapers back in the East would talk about how they're coming and they're going to arrive on this date. And then once they get there, they're basically treated like celebrities.
Wow. It's very interesting. We're speaking with Garrett Wright, and this talk that we're talking about is part of a larger event on February 15th. That's a Saturday, Great Journeys in World History and the Travelers Who Described Them, and you can get more information on it at humanities.unc.edu. But the way that these things, these journeys and like the crisscrossing journeys here are covered at the time versus talked about today says a lot about the way that we conceive of not just American history, but just American identity in general. Like this journey of Lewis and Clark is something that still figures very strongly in elementary school U.S. history textbooks, whereas the journey of Native Americans to the East, which is just as long and just as significant a journey, we don't hear about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Lewis and Clark are central kind of myths to the American national memory, right? But these American Indians made an equally long trip for equally important purposes for their own people, but it tends to be kind of erased.
Although now you just said the key word, so I have to ask, what makes them myths?
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking, you know, like you've got your Mayflower, your Jamestown, your Lewis and Clark. These are kind of the things that Americans tend to hang their memory on in the founding of this nation.
In a sense, maybe stories that are as much symbols as they are relating events and whatnot. The symbolism of the Mayflower. Yes, the Mayflower landed, but it also is a symbol of something.
Right. And that shapes the way that we think about ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm curious about the relations. So Lewis and Clark, when they're heading out, you know, and I read a wonderful book. I had, you know, Meriwether Lewis is a very interesting person. Anyway, you know, he committed suicide shortly after the whole event and from my understanding, had issues all through the trip as well from various reports. Put that aside, tragic story there. What was their... when they would meet Native Americans, how much were they predicting that, in fact, we will run this place? And what does that do for policy? So in the East, we already know there's been some dislocations of land and seizures of lands. Do they go out there with knowing that this is what they're going to do? And does that get mentioned to the Native Americans?
Whether Lewis and Clark actually have that goal in mind, I'm not 100% sure, but Thomas Jefferson 100% did. He wrote this letter to William Henry Harrison in 1803, I believe, basically saying, we're going to trade liberally with American Indians, drive them into debt, and then force them to sell off their land to alleviate that debt.
It gets a little bit heavy, doesn't it?
And this is a letter between Jefferson and Harrison when Jefferson is already a major figure in American history, and Harrison isn't yet, but will be.
Right. So at the time, Harrison was governor of Indiana Territory. So this is kind of setting the stage for what's going to happen in Louisiana as well under William Clark.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I think is interesting about these, we often will say, well, you know, we're judging things from the values of today, and this is just the way the worldview. Were there skeptical voices about the expedition, or, you know, when, say, for example, Americans met the Native, the Indians or Native Americans coming back, who might have questioned this? Was that a discourse, or was it all triumphalism in the American press?
Yeah, I mean, so there was controversy over the Louisiana Purchase itself. I haven't seen any kind of criticism of, you know, the very presence of the United States once it's purchased, though.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of to that end, like, are we reading the present into the past? I think actually these two journeys, when you think about them together, are a really powerful moment to kind of put ourselves in the shoes of the people in 1806, and kind of recognizing that the way we know history plays out isn't the inevitable history that's going to happen.
So this event is going to be on Saturday, February 15th, 9 to 5. Other things that people will get at the event? Max, you mentioned a couple of them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we asked Brett Whalen, who is our resident medievalist, to give a talk, you know, we were sort of thinking maybe pilgrimages, the Crusades, and he's a medievalist, bear that in mind, and he suggested Christopher Columbus, who is not someone we necessarily associate with the medieval era, certainly early modern. But what I think will be really interesting about that talk is to see this real connection between, you know, the Reconquista, how that, you know, the medieval origins of that, some of the ideas of Christendom that really informed Christopher Columbus's voyage are very much immersed in the middle, you know, in the Middle Ages in this medieval period. So I think that should be a really interesting perspective on that. And of course, one of the things we saw, we didn't want to put too fine a point up, but two of our talks are a little bit grim in that they deal with, you know, interactions with Native Americans, and Christopher Columbus has a lot of negative things that we could talk about in terms of his own dealings with Native Americans. So our seminar will be a little dark in the morning, maybe, and then get a little lighter in the end, where we're talking about literary production in the afternoon. So we always square the circle by putting these things together, and in our panel session, we'll be discussing them. Certainly, Mark Twain's colorful analysis of traveling to Europe doesn't have quite the resonance in terms of getting into some heavy topics that these earlier ones will.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and now I'm about to say something that's completely ill-formed in my head, so bear with me.
This is what this show is for. We generate ideas.
Do this in a live microphone, but like all of these historical journeys, and you think of the ones that are going to be covered here at this event, and several others that we can think of are celebrating journeys, but they always have that kind of tinge of colonialism underneath them, or they very often do. At what point did that connection cease to be the case? Is it still the case today?
To associate these with colonialism?
Well, to associate just travel with colonialism.
Garrett, you want
to
take that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, especially in American history, travel is something that is in the minds of Americans done by white Americans moving west, and what I know, on the overland trails, right? And so that's kind of why I find these indigenous delegations to the United States so interesting, is because it's kind of pointing to moments saying, no, you know, indigenous people were also traveling actively and with a purpose, right?
And perhaps an anti-colonial purpose in that case, you know, if not necessarily explicit, at least the call for recognition of equality. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, they make some pretty strong statements to Thomas Jefferson in Washington, D.C., which I'll get into on the 15th as well.
And that's even after the invitation was probably made with colonial purposes in mind.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, it's all about power and kind of military might.
You know, I think, Aaron, your point is I think you'll find anyone who travels in Africa or anyone who travels, you know, it's you're balancing, you know, economics. You're giving you're bringing money to countries and spending money, but then you also find yourself in what feel like sort of distasteful relations, you know, in a way that you're, you know, say you're at some safari and you're eating much better than everyone else around you and everything. So I think that travel is a tricky one when it comes to colonialism and power, and you know, the more we travel, the more we become exposed to the world and hopefully become better and more empathetic people. But travel will always have that little bit of a power dynamic, and that's something that's hard to parse.
Anything else that people need to know about this event or upcoming events for Carolina Public
Humanities? Well, we would just want to remind folks that tomorrow night, the problematic Oscars are on deck again.
Yeah,
and
that's
I know that you are working closely with our colleague Rachel Shavitz, and you'll be continuing working with her on that podcast. That's fantastic. But
even after she's in New Zealand.
Zealand.
Exactly. But tomorrow night is the tomorrow night is Rachel's swan song when it comes to doing things on film and the Triangle. So with Mike Wiley and Rachel Shavitz, we'll be doing the Oscars presentation. Looking forward to it.
At the Varsity Theater. It should be fun. Humanities.unc.edu for more information on this event and others for Carolina Public Humanities. And again, this particular event, Great Journeys in World History and the Travelers Who Described Them, is an all-day affair on Saturday, February 15th.
One thing about that, pre-registration is required for that one, so we do ask that you contact humanities.unc.edu or give us a call.
And do that quick, because that is spots are going fast. Max Orr, Garrett Wright, thank you so much for being with us
today. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.